Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the pickup line department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, I'm going to share this as a service to our female listeners.
Oh, no, this isn't going to lead to another class action restraining order, is it?
No, I can't take it.
I just can't take it, man.
No. These are appropriate responses to bad pickup lines.
Appropriate responses. Okay, well, go ahead.
For instance, when a man says, "Haven't I seen you someplace before?" the appropriate response is, "Yes, that's why I don't go there anymore." I like it. When a man says, "Is this seat empty?" the appropriate response, "Yes, it is, and if you sit there, this one will be empty too." When a man says, "Your place or mine?" the appropriate response is, "Bolt. You go to yours, I'll go to mine." Here's a good one. When a man says, "So what do you do for a living?" the best response is, "I'm a female impersonator."
Yeah, that'll get him running, won't it?
All right, one more. When a man says, "I would go to the end of the world for you," the appropriate response is, "But would you stay there?"
These are good. I'm sure these are going to get well used by some of our listeners. Well, look, if your mechanic's giving you a line, you can run it by us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Erica.
Hi, Erica. Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All right. Where are you from?
I'm calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
Really?
Yeah, Boston.
Are you a student?
I just graduated from Suffolk University in May.
No kidding.
Really? What's your field?
Yes. I was an English major.
I used to teach at Suffolk.
Well, yeah, back when it was a one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's going on, Erica?
All right, so I drive a 2001 Mercury Grand Marquis, and it's a gorgeous vehicle. It has 334,000 miles on it.
Really?
Yeah, it used to actually work as my father's taxi. He drives a cab in Boston.
Oh.
And so I got passed on to this gorgeous car. Only recently, it's never given me any problems, but only recently, the brakes started hissing at me. Every single time I put any pressure on the brakes, it seems to hiss at me.
How recently did your father drive this thing? How long have you been driving it?
I've been driving it for about a year and a half now.
Oh.
Okay, because yeah. I thought maybe if your father had some enemies that maybe they threw a snake at him.
He's a good man.
Well, you never know. So it hisses at you when you step on the brake.
Yes.
But otherwise, it's okay.
And I don't know if it's a major problem. I don't know what would be. It either sounds like a snake hissing with a combination of a balloon letting air go.
Exactly.
I don't know what it is.
Well, you're real close, because what you're hearing is your power brake booster leaking.
It's
leaking is it's allowing air to come in to the back of the booster because there's a breach in the seal there.
So does that mean that my brakes are going to go? What does that mean?
The next time you drive the car, you're going to crash into a bridge.
No, that's terrible.
No. It's unlikely they're going to fail like that, but it is giving you the hissing is.
But you're going to get it fixed.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, is your father still in the business?
Yes, he is. He's a Boston cab driver.
Oh, so he probably has access to used parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, because those guys always use used parts whenever they can. So you need a vacuum booster.
Okay. Is this big bucks?
No, it's used. It's probably I don't know. Between $50 and $100 for the part.
I was going to say $100.
Okay, $200. And, you know, it might be
$79.95.
Right, today. Only today. If you buy one today, in fact, if you call right now, we'll send you two. And if you can find someone to put it in for $100, you'll have done well.
Yeah.
All right, great.
But do it, because eventually, you don't know it. But
you're not going to have any brakes.
You're losing your power brakes. And your stopping distance is now greater than it should be.
Well, okay. I think that my car's mad at me because I actually was thinking of doing the Cash for Clunkers about a month ago, and it only started a month ago. So I think my car has kind of
had designs on its demise.
Exactly, yeah.
And now she's hissing at you. Watch out, Erica.
Exactly.
Anyway, get it fixed and all will be right.
All right. Thank you so much.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Rick from Santa Rosa, California.
Hey, Rick, what's going on?
Santa Rosa.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have a 92 Dodge Dakota pickup. has a 6-cylinder engine. It's fuel injected.
Yeah.
175,000 miles. I've had it since it's brand new.
Good.
What happens is when it's cold in the morning and I fire it up, it runs fine. Soon as it warms up and I shut it off, then I try to turn it back on, I have trouble starting it. It'll idle really rough and then stall, and idle really rough and then stall, and I'll do it 6 or 8 times. And if it does run, it kind of makes a noise like...
It sounds like when you try to get Tommy out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, kind of like me, actually.
Yeah.
And I'll do that 6 or 8 times, and then, boom, it'll fire up, and it'll run fine. Now, it's been doing this about 18 months, and I just, because I can keep it going, you know, and I keep it going.
What do you care?
I don't care. I keep driving it. She's my baby. It's my daily driver, and I work out of it, right?
Yeah.
Now, the latest thing is, every once in a while, I'll be driving it, and I'll be accelerating, and she'll just die. Boom, just nothing. So I just throw it up into neutral, you know, turn the ignition key. She fires right back up and keeps going. And she doesn't cough or gag then.
Yeah.
She just fires right back up.
I love it.
It's been going on for a couple of years, but, you know, I can always get it started when I need to. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer.
Okay, well, give us a couple of years to think about this, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah, we may actually 6 months might be enough.
Well, you know, I listen every week, and I was driving across the Golden Gate Bridge loaded. With the truck loaded. And
weren't loaded. The truck was loaded. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the truck was loaded. And so I figured I better do something now. I can't be stalling out on the freeway.
Well, and this thing has a gajillion miles on it. What did you say, 100 and what?
175. My goal is 200,000.
When it finally does clear up, does it then run okay?
Yes.
It runs just as well as it had before you shut it off?
Yes.
Have you ever shut it off and waited... like a minute or two before you restarted it?
I have.
And
it'll do the same thing. What I need to do is just keep trying it. Usually 8 or 10 tries, and then it'll fire up and idle. You know, and idle fine. Normally, it's almost like when I do it, it's almost like it's running on 3 cylinders.
Gotcha.
Just really...
Well, it is,
and
because
boom, it dies.
Because something isn't getting the signal that it's supposed to. The computer... is getting us an erroneous or an incomplete signal from one of the sensors. I mean, my first reaction was, oh, it's 175,000. It could be something like a fuel pump or a fuel pump relay. And it still could be either one of those things. And the way to find this out is to have somebody take it and reproduce the conditions. And they're pretty easy to reproduce. So, and somebody could hook up, for example, a fuel pressure tester to it and see if, in fact, anything is wrong with the fuel pressure.
Now, I put a fuel pump and a fuel filter in it about a year ago. I have a really good mechanic. I mean, really trustworthy, good guy, and he's dying trying to find it, and he can't find it. We did a fuel pump and a fuel filter about a year ago, and I mean, it just, you know, the next day, it did the same thing.
Okay. Now, I'm guessing you have a faulty sensor, and the most likely thing, I think, is the crank angle sensor, it's called.
Okay,
and it could be that once that thing gets hot enough, when you shut it off and try to restart, it's not getting the signal. In other words, the computer doesn't know that the engine is being cranked over as fast as it is, and it's not sending that strong enough signal to the computer, and it's not firing off the injectors like it should.
Oh.
So I'm guessing it's something like that, or maybe a bad throttle position sensor, but I'm going with the crank sensor.
Okay.
And you're going to have to trust this guy when he asks you to fork over hundreds of dollars. If you want, eventually it's going to stop running. And
sure,
that might be the best thing to hope for.
Right.
As long as you're not on a train track when it stops. You have to avoid train tracks, Rick.
Yeah.
But when it stops running, then anyone's going to be able to figure it out.
Sure.
But well, ask him to check the crank sensor.
Okay, we'll do that.
Good luck, and let us know.
Yeah, okay, but not too soon. We're not going to let you on again for 18 months.
Hey, thank you so much, and it's a pleasure listening to your program.
All right, good luck, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hi. This is Maria from Kerhonkson.
From Kerhonkson? Like we know which state that's in?
Oh, it's in New York.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you spell it? Yeah, give us a couple of letters.
Kerhonkson.
Kerhonkson, of course. That's exactly how I didn't think it was spelled. So what's up, Maria?
Hi. All right. So I have a little bit of a disagreement with my boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
He has a Volvo. It's a 2003 station wagon, and he always complains when he needs to change the headlights, which he has to do pretty often because it's got this kind of headlights that are always on.
Yes, yes. My wife has a similar Volvo.
And the thing is that whenever one headlight goes out, he insists on changing both of them.
Ah.
Because he said that everybody knows that when one headlight goes out, you change both headlights. And this is a guy, he's a musician, he actually wrote the world's longest song about how to fix things that go wrong. So he thinks he knows it all, right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, you know, why would you change both of them? Because, you know, you put in two light bulbs sometimes and one of them will burn out a long time before the other one burns out. I don't know why, but if the idea is that the other one's going to go out right away and that's why you're replacing them both, wouldn't you kind of want to stagger them a little bit so that you wouldn't be left in the dark if they happened to both go out at the same time and it was dark?
And what's his answer to this?
He said, well, it's in the manual.
What manual?
What manual? It's not in any manual.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen any manual. No. So anyway, I just thought, you know, I'm trying to save him a little bit of work and aggravation.
Well, I do know this, that in, like, commercial buildings, you know, when they change light bulbs, they often change them all, like those fluorescent light bulbs.
Yeah.
They'll take them all out and replace the good ones as well as the bad ones, because light bulbs have a life, you know, like lots of things, and it's pretty accurate. So if they say these things last, you know, 10,000 hours or whatever, usually they don't last a whole lot longer than that. So he may be right. I know this is killing you, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
He may be right to change the two bulbs, because if, in fact, he's already got his hands dirty and he's already gotten frustrated and sweaty, you might as well do the other one, too.
Oh, well, you know, we had a little bet riding on this.
Oh,
that was
you
that if,
did.
If you agreed with him, he'd add another verse to the 500 verses of his song.
Well, I'm not so sure that we agree with all that.
So you wouldn't change both of them at the same time?
No, I don't think so. I think it's excessive.
So you change one?
Yeah.
And then change the other one a day later?
Yeah.
I will tell you that, so my wife has an 01 Volvo, and her headlights blow out all the time. And so I have a couple of them in the glove box.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit of a pain in the neck to put in, but they're not terrible. It takes about 5 minutes or so to change one out. But I never do more than one at a time.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we're not agreeing with him.
I am agreeing with him. I should do both of them.
Well, do you have any idea when you do replace one?
Well, now I'm done. I can't do. I have no idea. Once you've done what Maria suggests you do, then you can't go back to doing. You can't go do two.
No. But
you right.
When you do one on your wife's car,
yes.
How soon do you have to do the other one?
When she complains about it. She says, I can't see anymore.
Sure, but does that happen the next day?
I don't know. In fact, because I didn't do it. In other words, the very first one that blew, if I had replaced both of them, chances are that the next time one of them blew, the other one would have been close behind.
Yeah.
But because I didn't do that, and I don't know when the second one blew.
Ah.
Okay, I can't. And also, cars may be slightly different. I mean, it may be that the lights blow for other reasons other than just age.
Sure.
You know, moisture gets in there or something happens. So it may be that you're right, Maria.
Ah.
Yeah. It may be that you're closer to being right. There's no statistical evidence to support changing both of them at the same time.
He can try it. Why doesn't he just put in one, remember when he did it, and find out when the second one goes?
Since he's been changing them both all along.
Yeah, but
Since he's been changing both of them at the same time, now is the time to actually do something scientific and change just the blown-out one.
Exactly.
And see how much longer it takes for the other one to blow. Now, is this the kind of guy... Does he make sure that before he goes to bed at night that the kitchen chairs are arranged properly around the table?
he's really quite methodical and wonderful.
Have another word for that. Methodical is a nice way to...
Yeah. But I think it's time to do a little research here.
Will do.
Yeah, so you have to insist. Say, nope, the next time, don't change the good bulb. Change just the bad one, and let's see how much longer that good one lasts. And it may last two more years.
It's possible.
You might be going broke on light bulbs.
All right, we'll try it, and I'll
let us
you
know how you make out.
Good luck.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
You got a tough nut to crack here, I'm sure. See you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, I think it's time for us to take a short break.
Good. I need to stretch my knee.
Hey, by the way, how's your knee feeling?
It's feeling, what's the medical term, stinkle.
Oh, really? Well, I guess I should explain that during our recent summer hiatus, my brother got himself a brand new knee.
Yes, indeed, I did.
Now, did you have that done at the dealership, or did you just go, like, for an aftermarket part?
You know me. I like to save money. I got it at Pep Boys.
Well, look, after you stretch out your new knee, what are we going to discuss?
No discussion. I'm going to tell you a love story.
Oh, no. I can hardly wait. Well, we'll have that. More of your car questions, and later on, you ready for this?
Yeah.
A brand new puzzler. So stay tuned.
We'll be back in just a minute.
The long way isn't the wrong way, and a wrong turn isn't the end. If it's understood, maybe something good is coming at you round the bend. Let Flagstaff in the morning to make Salt Lake my night. Driving across the moon, hoping it's right.
And even though pioneers heading west in their covered wagons turn north toward Canada whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a jackhammer operator and miss grating noises when you get home.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and a little love story, eh?
Yeah. A listener named John Maloney sent us this very sweet story.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
A man and a woman who have never met before find themselves in the same sleeping compartment of a train.
Mm-hmm.
After the initial embarrassment, they both go to sleep. The woman on the top bunk, the man on the lower bunk.
Got it.
In the middle of the night, the woman leans over, wakes the man and says, I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm awfully cold and I was wondering if you could possibly get me another blanket. The man leans out and with a glint in his eye says, I got a better idea. Just for tonight, let's just pretend that we're married. The woman thinks for a minute. Why not? She giggles. Great, he replies. Get your own damn blanket.
I love it. Hey, by the way, later in this very show, the Puzzler is going to make its season debut.
Really?
Indeed.
Can you give us a hint? Is it one of those where someone breaks down and all they have in the trunk is a bottle of Filippo Berio extra virgin olive oil and a tube of Preparation H?
You've been picking up my notes! No, you're going to have to wait and see. I'm not revealing anything. I'll reveal it all in due time, my knucklehead brother. Meantime, if you have a car problem you'd like us to flub, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, who's this?
This is Scott.
Hey, Scott, where are you from?
What's up?
I am from Bellevue, Idaho.
Okay, because we have to know where you are in case we have to send the agents out looking for you.
Yeah, I hear you.
What's going on?
All right, I have a 2001 Ford F-150 crew cab.
Okay.
And I have, in the back seat, they have headrests.
Yeah.
I took one of the headrests off, or actually both of them off, as I went on a trip because I had to fold the seat down. When I went to put it back, I put one of them in backwards. So the headrest post with the notches is on the wrong side, and it is stuck. And
you
cannot...
Of course, you can't get it out.
Yeah, at all.
So when you tried to put it in, was this the first one or the second one you put in? Because if it was the second one...
No, it was the first one.
It was the
second one in, and I was like... I figured it out.
Well, you have a dilemma once you put the first one in wrong. You have to decide if you want to put the second one in the same way.
So well, needless to say, it's stuck, and it's about 5 inches higher than the other one, and you see the metal post sticking up, and I can't remove it.
Is it a problem for any other reason? I mean, is it blocking your view of things?
Not at all. It's just kind of annoying.
So you could forget about it?
I could.
Or you could take a hacksaw.
Well, there is something. So it's sticking way up, right?
Yes, it is.
What if you did do that? What if you hacksawed it off?
Yeah.
Okay, at that point, you'd have an appropriate headrest that was just a little shorter. Right? But the piece that's in the wrong place would be stuck inside. You might be able to knock it through.
All the way to the bottom, you're saying?
Right, yeah. So you could rattle around inside that seat cushion, the seat back there. But you might. But before you did that, because that's certainly one option.
I'd try whacking it with a sledgehammer.
I've tried.
You have?
I've had friends pulling it, and I've tried several things.
Really?
And I don't want to cut it if I can avoid it.
Jeez, I like the... So you've had friends try to pull on it, but if you tried the notion of hitting it with an impact, like a hammer, you know, like a lever that you could use, because impact force is a great multiplier.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems to me that's got to do it.
That's why we use hammers to drive nails into walls and don't push them in with our thumbs.
Right.
You know, so...
Okay.
So you could... Can the seat be leaned forward, the seat back leaned forward?
Yes.
Okay,
ah,
so
good.
You can do that. Does the back window slide open?
It does.
It does.
If it doesn't, it's going to when you get through.
So you could get in there with a piece of 2x4, for example.
Yeah.
Wedged up against this thing and have an assistant.
With a sledgehammer.
With a
heavy, heavy duty sledgehammer.
You don't want to hit it with too big a hammer. That thing might go flying out and go right through the windshield.
True. Yeah, we don't want that.
So you want to make sure you protect the windshield. You have to allow for all eventualities here.
Okay.
So I think you need to make sure you protect the windshield. But I think having a 2x4 up against this thing and having somebody hit the other end of it.
Real force is the only thing.
Now,
that's
you know, you realize
it.
There's a button there, the release button. If you try to press.
Yeah, that's on the side with the post with no notches.
Yeah. Well, I know, but it may be doing something inappropriate. So you might want to be pressing on that. And the other admonition is to make sure your face is out of the way when he hits the end with the sledgehammer. Because I think that's going to dislodge it.
All right.
I think if you press the button, hit that thing with a good shot, it's going to come loose.
Okay.
If nothing else, it'll be fun, right?
It sounds fun, so hit it with a hammer, all right.
Yeah, I think you got to hit it with a hammer and the appropriate piece of wood. I mean, you could leave it the way it is, but I can tell that it is disturbing your sense of symmetry.
Well, it's over my right shoulder, so every time I turn around, I see it.
Well, look, if you do this in the next half an hour or so...
Call back!
Call us back and let us know if it worked.
Okay.
All right, and if not, we'll give you a list of windshield replacement shops in your area.
Okay, perfect.
See you later.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye, Scott.
Bye.
What a pain that is, huh?
Man. Yeah, and then when you put that thing in the wrong way, misses it. Oh. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Amber calling from Kansas City.
Kansas City. What's going on?
Well, I have a 2004 yellow Volkswagen Beetle, and I seem to have a problem with what I think is related to the cruise control. The very first episode that I had with this particular issue, I had just gotten off the highway. I was on my way home, and I decided I would stop at Blockbuster and pick up a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled into the parking lot. I pulled into a parking space right in front of the Blockbuster door.
And drove right through the door.
I was just getting ready to put it in park, and the car lurched over the curb and right into the store.
Really? Jeez.
Oh, yeah. Real-life car crash.
And your foot was on the brake at this time?
Yes.
At least that's what you told the police.
They didn't give me a ticket.
Really?
They didn't give you a ticket.
No ticket.
But between you and us. Your foot was on the brake.
I had my foot on the brake. I was almost at a standstill.
Uh-huh.
And so now I had thousands and thousands of dollars worth of repairs done to this vehicle.
Not to mention, you probably didn't rent your movie that night.
No, I didn't.
You got the latest Brad Pitt movie?
Oh, it was crazy. Well, so since then, I took it to Volkswagen, because the people that did the repair work said that they couldn't find any cause for it. So I took it to Volkswagen. They did. They said they went over it with a fine-tooth comb, and they couldn't find anything wrong with it. Now it's done it two more times.
It has.
Yes, and it's always when I've just disengaged the cruise control. Like if I'm braking on a ramp, it will just surge like there's a ghost down there putting a pedal to the metal.
Well, when you brought the car to the dealership, did you tell them that?
Yes.
And they said they couldn't find anything.
Right.
Well, they certainly weren't going to drive it under these conditions. So you have, first of all, there are lots of things that cancel out the cruise control, the most prominent of which is stepping on the brake pedal.
Right.
You know, so if I had any doubts about anything, I would certainly change that switch, which cancels the cruise control. But I'm guessing that the problem is not that. But
okay.
Although that would be an easy thing to do and something that should be done just as a matter of course to eliminate that as a possibility. But I'm thinking the problem is more in the computer and in the electronic throttle. And it's
okay.
possible that there's some radio frequency interference that's sending a signal to your throttle that's opening up the throttle. And maybe it thinks the cruise control is getting re-engaged or resumed when it shouldn't be. But you can't resume the cruise control unless you're going, you know, in excess of maybe 20 miles an hour. If you try to engage the cruise control at like 15, I'm pretty sure it won't engage. So once you've slowed down to pull up to Blockbuster, you're going 4 miles an hour or 2 miles an hour. There's almost no way, unless there's something dramatically wrong with the cruise control.
Which that, there is.
Which there may be or may not be. It may not be related to the cruise controls per se, but there's no way that that thing should resume from 2 miles an hour, even if you try to resume it.
Absolutely.
I think you have to take this back to the dealership and tell them you want to leave it there, have somebody drive it until it happens to him.
Right.
Because
just make sure they don't live in your neighborhood.
Yeah, no, because it's going to happen, and they're the ones who should experience it, not you.
Absolutely. Now, I have found when the cruise control is not on, it has not happened at all. Now, even though you step on the brake and you disengage the cruise control, it is still in the on position. And so what I've gone to doing is, as soon as I start to brake, then I reach down and I flip the cruise control completely off.
So you turn the switch off.
I turn the switch
and
off.
And it's never happened.
It's never happened.
Well, here's what you need to do. I mean, you need to take it to the dealer, like Tommy says, and have them look up all the service bulletins on this car.
Okay.
Because it's very likely that you're not the only one that's had this problem. And if you are and they can't find anyone else that has it, sell it! Yeah, I know you
can't, love this car.
I know you love it, but, well, first of all, you have the option of driving it without using the cruise control.
Yes.
And if that fixes it, then, in fact, you can continue to drive it if no one can figure out what it is. But it would be nice to have the cruise control, obviously, but if the choice is drive it with the cruise control and risk your life or drive it without it and drive it safely, I think you'd choose to drive it without it, at least until such time as you can get someone to figure it out.
Absolutely.
But I think Tommy's suggestion is to take it back and say, you guys keep this as long as you need to and drive it every single day.
Yeah, it is a good idea. And, you know, the car, even though it's 5 years old, only has 52,000 miles on it.
Yeah, it's
brand
new.
It's like a brand new car.
Yeah, no, go and complain and tell them to keep it. And if you have to borrow a car or rent a car, or if you need a car, Tommy has three or four jalopies in his driveway. Where are you, Kansas City? He'll be there in two days.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, good luck, Amber.
Thank you, guys.
Keep us posted.
I will.
All right. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888. We shouldn't be laughing. This is serious business.
Of course it's serious.
888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Zach from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Zach. What's going on?
I'm driving a 97 Honda Civic, and I'm having an issue with the back seat where the passengers sit. If they're in there for more than about 5 or 10 minutes, they end up with sort of a murky kind of brown liquid on their pants. And
really?
I'm trying to figure it out.
Wait, I think this is way too much information.
Wait, this sitting in the back?
Yeah, just the back seat.
And both of them wind up with a murky brown liquid.
Yeah.
On their butts.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you careening around corners? I mean, I hate to think of what's going on back there.
No, I drive very safe.
Is there a chance you could have spilled something back there?
Well, I don't think I could have spilled that much because this was months it was happening.
But everyone who sits back there winds up with the brown stain on his pants.
Yeah,
don't wear white! You have to put a sign, no white pants allowed. Have you tried blotting the seat? In other words, if you took a bunch of paper towels, and instead of, well, you could sit on the paper towels.
Or stand,
or put your weight on them, and see if, in fact, anything gets absorbed by the paper towels. It's possible that the plastic of the seat is disintegrating.
Is that at the bottom?
Well, it would be from underneath. Yeah, I mean, you can take the seat out. I don't think there's anything back there. There's nothing that could be under the seat. There's no liquid stored there. There's no way any gasoline or brake fluid or transmission fluid or anything else would be in that vicinity. So there's nothing there that could be sucked up by the seat cushion. What likely, though, is that the seat cushion is somehow either absorbed something that you spilled there. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Maybe a gallon of, Hawaiian punch or something. I don't know. I mean, there's no chance in your mind. You don't have any friends who are pranksters, do you?
I do, but I hope I haven't given them access to my car.
Oh, you do? Have you pulled any pranks on any of them that they might be trying to get back at you with something like this?
No.
No? Well, I think what you need to do is remove the seat.
Okay.
Okay, and if I'm not mistaken, the seat has a couple of bolts that hold it in, and you can pull the whole seat cushion out. And it should be immediately obvious what is wrong.
Is there any smell related to this?
No, but there's a little bit of looks like white mold on the seat as well.
Oh.
Really?
Really? Really? I think something's living in there.
I don't want to think about it.
Yeah. Well, something maybe was living in
was
there.
Was living.
Oh.
Boy, this is an interesting problem.
Well, here's what you do. Here's the first thing you do. You go out and you buy yourself one of those hazmat suits. And then you get a bunch of that yellow tape and you put it all around the car. And then you're going to have to go in there and take the seat out. But seriously, if you are going to take the seat out, I think I would wear gloves and a mask.
Oh, yeah.
I will.
Yeah, God knows what's in there.
And when you flip it upside down, you're going to see something.
Okay. And it ain't going to be good.
It ain't going to be pretty.
Yeah, no. There is one other possibility is that there's enough heat coming up from the exhaust system. If there was something wrong with the car, it's enough heat to be melting that seat. But then again, your passengers would probably feel that the seat were very warm.
Yeah.
Are they complaining about that?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Well, how long does it take before somebody jumps up and says, "Jeez, what?" What's the longest somebody can ride in there before they get the brown stain?
Maybe 5 minutes.
Oh, really?
5 minutes. Yeah. And so who was the last victim?
I took some friends up to Seattle, and they didn't notice till the very end, and they had to change pants.
And they don't talk to you anymore, right?
Yeah. I left them there.
Jeez, you left them there, of course. No, I think you need to, at least in the short term, you need to put a blanket or something over the seat.
Not good enough.
But not good enough. No, you need to take the seat out.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to find something awful. I can't imagine what it is, but I've got to think that something leaked onto the seat.
Yeah.
And you've got mushrooms growing in there now.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, brown
mushrooms. I'm not supposed to do it myself.
You could do it yourself, or you could just innocently take it someplace and say, "Just could you take out my seat? I like to do it every couple of years just to see what's under there." But you need to have a look-see.
Okay.
All right, good luck, man.
And, all right, thank you very much.
Guys. Notify us if you survive.
I will.
See you, Zach.
All right,
that is an interesting mystery.
Oh, it sure is.
I would love to find out.
Hey, all right, look, before we get to the new puzzler. Hey, did you hear that? The new puzzler.
Yeah.
We have to take a short break.
Do you get a case of nerves when the puzzler returns from summer break? You know, like the first day of school?
Well, no, but maybe I should, huh? Maybe that would help.
Hey, anything's worth a try.
Look, when we come back, I'll have the first puzzler of the new puzzler season, and it happens to be from my back-to-school series.
No kidding. And we'll have more of your car questions, too, so please stay tuned.
I bought a new used car, and let's just say it didn't give me much on the trade, so I took out an ad in the local classified. Well, the phone wasn't ringing off the hook, but if you stop by to take a look at my fading star, $1,000 car. An old house painter looked her over good. Spent a half an hour under the hood, but he drove away in a cloud of thick blue smoke.
And even though Serena Williams dials up her anger management coach whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. And I did say that this was from my Back to School series. And I thought now that all the kiddies are back to school, we would have a kiddie-appropriate Puzzler. You know, a puzzle that would get everyone back to school. Adults, kids.
Sure.
You know, kind of an initiation kind of Puzzler.
Good idea.
You know.
Good idea.
Post-vacation.
All right.
You ready?
Enough baloney. Just give it to us.
Okay, listen up. On Tommy's most recent departure from his senses, he bought himself a World War I vintage biplane, the kind he flew when he was a boy, you know? His purpose was to fly this plane from One Horse, Nevada, the town where he bought the airship, to the nearest town. Distance and name unknown.
Yeah.
Now, this gem, this paragon of aeronautical engineering, can fly 20 times faster than Tommy can walk. Okay?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. He takes off.
Yeah.
Starts flying to wherever. Okay? And when he reaches the halfway point, he lands the plane. And get this. He swaps the plane for a jackass. So there's a guy walking there with a jackass. Tommy says, "You can have the plane.
Give
me the jackass." So even though the jackass, that is the one with four legs, can travel only half as fast as Tommy can walk, Tommy completes the journey on the jackass with his fine Italian loafers never touching the ground. So I'm going to recap.
Yeah.
So Tommy is flying the plane from One Horse, Nevada to some nearby town, wherever that may be. He flies half the distance, lands the plane. Okay, the plane can fly 20 times as fast as Tommy can walk.
Yeah.
The jackass, which he trades the plane for, can go half as fast as Tommy can walk.
Yeah.
Okay, and he completes the second half of the journey on the jackass. So the jackass is on the jackass, if you know what I mean. So here's the question. If Tommy had traveled the whole distance on foot, no plane, no jackass, would this odyssey from One Horse have taken less time, more time, or the same amount of time? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a Husqvarna 370 BTS 65cc, 198-mile-per-hour backpack leaf blower with X-torque engine, two-stage intake air filtration, tube-mounted throttle control, and padded harness, and send it along with an alarm clock so I can get up early Sunday morning and blow the leaves out from under my brother's window to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
Joyce.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from Aberdeen, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
I bet you don't know where that is.
No.
He doesn't even know where North Carolina is, let alone Aberdeen. So what's going on, Joyce?
I know where North Carolina is. It's right above South Carolina.
Excellent.
Okay, Joyce, what's up?
Okay, I have a 2000 Camry.
Yeah.
And probably for the last 6 or 7 months, it's been making this noise. It's like... It's almost like wind going through a tunnel and whistling.
And when does it make this noise?
Well, it can do it the whole time I'm driving. When I put on my brake, it usually stops.
Ah. So you have to be moving for the noise to occur.
You're correct.
Correct.
Okay. So when you start up the car, it doesn't make any noise.
No.
You put it into drive. Does it make any noise?
Well, it depends. And I noticed yesterday we had a cooler day.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem to come on. And then later it came on. And I drove all the way to Kentucky.
Kentucky? What are you doing driving way over there?
That's where I'm from.
Oh, that's where you're from.
Oh.
So, anyway, I just trust.
Well, that's a mistake.
Is that a mistake?
Well, I don't know. You're going to find out shortly. But when did you first begin to hear the noise, you said?
Well, it's probably in June.
In June, okay. Huh. Okay, so 8 months ago.
Yeah.
So when you started hearing it in June, it was telling you, Joyce, that your brakes were worn out, your front brakes. Because your brake pads have attached to them something called a wear indicator.
Uh-huh.
And that wear indicator is a little piece of metal that's designed when the pads are worn out to rub against the disc rotor that's turning and to make this
horrible noise.
That's what it sounds like.
And it's telling you, replace my pads.
Right, because the brake pads are worn out so much that wear indicator is touching the disc rotor and not the brake pads.
Okay.
And eventually, if you drive it long enough, that little piece of metal will break off and the noise will go away.
Yeah, and the car will go away too.
So
the next day.
So usually people get it looked at before that piece breaks off because that's too long to wait.
Great.
So take it someplace and have your brakes checked, and definitely have them checked before you make another trip to Kentucky.
I will.
All right.
Thank you so much.
See you, Joyce.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hey, this is David from White House, Tennessee.
Hey, David, what's going on?
Well, I've got a 2006 Nissan Sentra Special Edition. It comes with the 1.8-liter four-cylinder engine.
As opposed to the 1.6. To make you feel special.
Yeah. Or a big honking V8.
Yeah.
The car's been great. It's got 45,000 miles on it. And I've noticed here in the past several weeks that as I drive away from a stoplight or from my house or whatever, the shifting from automatic transmission, the shifting from first to second gear is normal. But when it shifts from second to third gear, it makes a tiny little pink kind of sound. It's almost like a metallic clink, or, you know, occasionally it almost sounds like a little bit of a tire bark, but I know that little car is not barking its tires.
And then this happens every time?
Pretty much every time. You know, when I was driving into work this morning, I didn't notice it when I left my house. However, after I stopped at about the second red light and left, then I noticed it on that time, but pretty much every time.
So the shift from first to second is okay.
It's always okay. Never heard it going from first to second.
And then second to third, so at that point you're going, you know, 25 miles an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how about third to fourth?
Third to fourth, no problem.
Just second to third. And is it worse if you're accelerating hard?
You know, that's the funny thing, because I've tried that, zooming up and down my road.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be any louder or any quieter, regardless of the speed.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds kind of like it's coming from the front of the car over on the left side, like the driver's side.
Front of the car on the driver's side. And since you've noticed this noise, you, of course, have stopped listening to the radio, because you can't listen to the radio and listen to this anymore.
Right. Well, if the radio is low, I listen to NPR a lot. So if the, you know, if the radio is kind of
low,
that's
your mistake.
Maybe if I change channels, it'll go away.
But it doesn't affect in any way the car operates. In other words, you feel that all the shifts are normal and everything is right, just right with the car.
Yes, it seems like it shifts at normal, you know, normal RPMs, and the car doesn't lurch or jerk or anything. It's just this little noise, and I'm concerned about it because I don't know if that's something that's indicating, you know, something's going on that's going to suddenly...
No, it probably is.
Oh.
No, I don't know. I haven't had this noise occur in a Sentra that I've driven, but we've heard it in other cars, but not in exactly the manner you describe. Usually when this happens, believe it or not, and I don't know why it's choosing to happen on that shift between second and third, but what's happening, I believe, is that maybe you're getting some flexing in the front exhaust pipe, or maybe on the there's a flexible joint between the engine and the front pipe, and sometimes under the right torque conditions, you can get that pipe to bend enough to give you that little dink. And this is going to be a hard thing to reproduce, because if you put it up in the air and then have the transmission go through its shifts, you will not hear this, and the reason you won't hear it is there's not enough load on the engine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's doing all the shifts, but the engine isn't moving. And what's causing the noise, I think, is the engine moving, and that movement of the engine is causing this pipe to tink like this.
Interesting.
Now, you may go to the dealer and find out if there's a bulletin on it.
Oh, okay.
But if there isn't, you're probably going to have to wait till it gets worse.
Or just turn the radio up louder.
Or turn the radio up louder.
Exactly.
And you might have to start listening to, like, heavy metal, you know, much louder music.
It's funny, when you guys are on, I can't hear it.
Oh, good.
That makes perfect sense.
Good luck, well, David.
Thank you very much.
All right, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Julie, calling from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hi, Julie.
Julie, Baltimore.
Hi there. I have a 2000 automatic Toyota Camry, and my accelerator sticks and then pops. And I'm just concerned. I have young children in the back seat, and I'm afraid they're going to get whiplash.
Oh, worse than that, they might hurl on you.
That would be bad, too.
Yeah. So you're driving along, and you take your foot off the gas, and the car keeps going.
No. Not quite. When I'm stopped, and I press the accelerator to go, there's a stick and then a pop, and it kind of shoots.
Right. In other words,
okay.
your throttle sticks in the what's called the closed position when your foot's off the pedal.
Right.
So once you're moving, and if you're going 20 miles an hour, for example, and you step on the throttle, there's no problem.
Rarely, very rarely does that occur.
Well, you could have a buildup of crud in the throttle body area. And it's okay. Often the case that you get, because there are always little backfires and whatever that occur in the intake manifold and get into the throttle area, it's possible to get a carbon buildup in there. And when that happens, the throttle plate will stick. So you step on the pedal harder and harder and harder, and nothing happens. And then finally, pop, it releases, and the car jerks forward. The kids get whiplash, and they throw up on the back seat.
Now, is that a simple fix? Usually
it's a simple fix. Usually you can go to your repair shop, and they'll clean the throttle with a solvent.
Okay.
That's all it takes most of the time.
Yeah, but once in a blue moon, the throttle body has to be replaced. If it's worn out enough, that throttle plate can wear a groove into the throttle body and it can get stuck. But usually cleaning it is going to do the trick, and you'll be good for another 9 or 10 years.
Right.
Not bad, huh? Is that the only problem you have with this car?
It's a wonderful car.
So why haven't you traded this car in and bought a new one?
Not quite yet. I'm a third owner on this car, and it's about 117,000 miles.
Oh, it's brand new.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to save my money for my kids' college tuition.
Yeah.
Oh, good luck. See you, Julie.
Yeah, good
All
luck
right,
is
thanks
right.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for
All
calling.
Right. Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Annie from Nashville.
Hi, Annie.
Hi, Annie.
What's up?
I am a novelist. And
yeah.
I'm working on a book, and my heroine in the book owns a vintage Oldsmobile convertible, a 58, 57. And at some point in the story, she has to disable the car so the bad guys can't get it. She has no tools, and she has to disable it so that she can come back later and use the car again.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
How does she do that?
Easy.
Easy, yeah. She's going to pull out the coil wire.
Exactly. That was my idea.
What is the coil wire?
The coil wire is the...
She's got to be able to open the hood.
Yeah.
And then she's going to take out the one wire that runs from the coil to the center of the distributor. And the wire, the distributor is the thing that looks like a bunch of spaghetti. And because
there's a bunch of wires coming out of it.
It has 9 wires coming out of it.
Uh-huh.
Because it's an 8-cylinder car, it will have 8 wires going to the 8 spark plugs.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and the wire right in the center of this distributor cap, okay,
is the one
she has to remove.
The center wire.
The center wire, which is called the coil wire.
The coil wire.
And it's probably, you know, a foot or so long.
Oh.
And she can pull this off from both. It just unplugs. You just pull it out. Like you'd unplug a lamp from a wall socket.
Uh-huh.
And she's going to pull this coil wire out. And
right.
Put it in her pocket or her purse.
Or she can put it in her purse, right?
And
yeah.
No one is going to be able to start this car.
Okay.
They can hotwire it. They can do whatever they want. They can jump it. They can do whatever. But without the coil wire, the car won't start.
Okay.
But it will seem like it should. When they try to start it,
right.
It'll go,
Right. But it won't.
But it will not start.
And is it going to be greasy?
It might be. I mean,
well, it might be a little
dirty. You know, on an old car, it might be greasy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, I thought for sure you'd have to do a whole lot of research on this, but you just
No, we just made something up.
I
Are you going to send us a copy of this book?
Well, sure, absolutely. Now, it's not coming out until...
Till you write it.
No, it's almost written, but it doesn't come out until October of 2010.
Is this gonna be a million seller like several of our books?
From your mouth to God's ear.
Well, we have a million of them in our cellar. That's what we mean.
Right. I think it's going to be like that, right?
Well, good luck.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the help.
All right, Ann. If you need any more, call back.
I will. Bye.
See you later. Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey this week is the lovely Catherine Frau Blücher Federlosum, who's covering for Doug the Old Gray Mare, who's spending his vacation at yodeling school. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our production assistant is Aaron Wax. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Irvine Roast Swine, Salt Brine, Bad Wine, Pork Rind, Quinine, and Porcupine, Rain or Shine, Dance and Dine, Conga Line, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Hayward Jabuzoff. My brother's official co-pilot is Yvette DePence. The director of our Alpine Choir is Leo Leahy. Our long-distance cycling enthusiast is Major Ashburn. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometrist firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the non-tenured street performers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 938, scratch through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com. Or if you prefer, you can call the Shameless Commerce Division for Car Talk gifts at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, Road Trips from Hell.
I assume that this was written by everyone who's ever driven with you.
Hardly. These are very funny stories from our listeners. One I read was about a guy who was 17 and set off to cross the country with his best friend in a VW bus.
Uh-huh.
And for the first few days, he couldn't figure out why everybody was honking at him and waving. Then he realized that the night before he left, his little sister had plastered "Just Married" in huge letters across the back.
Oh, it's great. I love it.
That's Road Trip Stories from Hell on the homepage all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though bears put another X through their days until hibernation calendar, whenever we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.